In the late 1970s, the federal government began studying a site in Nevada with the hope that it would become the final resting place for highly radioactive waste generated by the country's nuclear power plants. Now, all along, this facility has faced both technical challenges and considerable popular opposition, and still, there is no official opening day for this site. The question that we'll try to talk about this morning in this part of Focus 580 is this: is there a better way to deal with nuclear waste? We have two guests joining us this morning. They're both professors of engineering at Vanderbilt University, David Cawson and Charles Powers, and they say the answer to that question is yes, there is a better way to deal with nuclear waste, and we'll talk about some of their ideas this morning. Just again to introduce our guest, David Cawson. He is professor and chair of civil and environmental engineering. He's also professor of chemical engineering and professor of earth and environmental sciences at Vanderbilt. Charles Powers is professor of environmental engineering, and they both are associated with something called CRESP. Those are the initials. That's the Consortium for Risk Evaluation with Stakeholder Participation, CRESP. It is a multi-university organization that carries out basic and applied research to improve the environmental restoration of the U.S. Department of Energy's complex to produce and maintain nuclear materials. They are both joining us this morning by telephone. And as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana, here where we are. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That's for people who are listening around Illinois and Indiana over the air. Also, actually, people across the country, if you happen to be listening on the internet, you can use that number and the calls on us. That's 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Anyone's welcome to call. We just ask people to try and keep their comments brief so we can keep moving along, but certainly you can call with questions or comments. Well, Professor Cawson, hello.
Good morning. And thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. And Professor Powers, hello.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks to both of you for being with us. I think what it would be good to do here just at the beginning is to just to do a little update on Yucca Mountain and perhaps to ask one or the other, or both of you can take a little shot at this, and to talk a little bit about how it is we ended up with Yucca Mountain as being the one proposed storage site for high-level waste. How did we end up with Yucca Mountain? And I don't, Professor Cawson, maybe you can go first, and then if Professor Powers wants to add something, you can.
Sure. This was a history where the United States went through a selection process that started off with a wide array of sites across the country and then down selected to five potential sites. And it was supposed to be a combination of the technical evaluation and a comparative evaluation. But then the country went forward and Congress decided to focus solely on Yucca Mountain and did not complete that comparative process. So that's how we ended up with where we are now, with Yucca Mountain being the sole focus for management of spent fuel and high-level nuclear waste in the United States.
And Congress made it very clear that it wanted only Yucca, even though it had not yet completed the technical evaluation. And in the course of choosing just that one, it moved from a situation where everyone had expected that there would be at least two repositories, and that one would be on the in the eastern part of the United States and one would be in the western part. And the political process within the Congress that yielded Yucca had to do with the relative strength of the three remaining sites, one in Washington State, one in Texas, and then one in Nevada. And frankly, at that point, Washington and Texas were stronger, and they didn't want it, and that left Nevada with the play, with the choice. It wasn't necessarily a bad choice, and technically, but it was a very incomplete process that had led that, to that selection.
Well, I think, and we'll go on and talk some more about this, but I think the argument you're making is that if you just look at it in terms of equity, it should not be the case that waste that is generated all over the country, that the burden of dealing with that waste should fall on only one state.
That is certainly part of the issue, and also the part of the issue is that you need it is not only a technical issue, it has to be technically safe and appropriate, but it also has to be socially acceptable. And there are issues of equity, of balancing across the country where the material is located in different parts of the cycle, because you have the power generation places. We suggest interim storage sites or aging locations prior to going to a final disposal site or someplace like Yucca Mountain, perhaps Yucca Mountain. But the process is as important in the sense of equity amongst those that are deriving benefits and is also very important.
Let me build on that.
Yes.
The whole process that David and I just described, how it got to one, was one in which the issues of consent of the affected parties, the most, at least the nearest neighbors, was simply left out. Was not the case that Nevada was always necessarily opposed. When it thought it was part of a sort of normal process, there was even considerable support even within the political and elected officials in Nevada. It was only when the choice was taken out of their hands that Nevada really reacted in the way in which they have ever since, which is to fight it every step of the way in every way they can. We think that changing that fundamental dynamic into one in which we say, well, let's go back, recover the technical basis and the equity basis. Let's relate the burden that we might distribute to four or five places in the country. But more than that, let's change the whole dynamic. There is nothing sort of so inherently unsafe about the process by which we store nuclear waste, particularly the sort that the Yucca is supposed to receive, that we should be in this sort of complete standoff around the question. We're there because we did it. We got to Yucca in such a way that we said it is so bad by implication that we can only get some, or can only put it somewhere if we force people to take it. We think that that fundamental dynamic is not only important for getting four or so regional sites where we keep this material for 90 years until we finally get one or several repositories that are also accepted. The whole idea of sort of reestablishing the basis of choice in which people understand what it is that they're taking on, are in some way compensated for taking on that responsibility, are participating throughout the process of knowing exactly what's coming and why they are going to be safe in the process and can monitor it. That would change the entire way of our thinking about nuclear storage, and I think also allow us to think more clear-headedly about whether or not and how we want additional nuclear energy.
Well, just not to put a too fine a point on it, but are you saying that you think that if this process had been handled in a different way, it would have been possible to perhaps, as far as Yucca Mountain is concerned, get a consensus that doesn't mean that everybody in the state of Nevada would approve, but that you could have gotten to a point where there would have been enough support for it so that it would have gone ahead?
You know, I was actually asked to look at this question. I've been fairly successful at creating institutions that have built consensus around technically based issues in the environmental field. And so I was asked by the Electric Power Research Institute back in 1991, just 4 years after we made this decision, to look at Yucca and to see whether or not I thought it would ever open. And my answer was, I think it might very well, but it won't happen unless there's two or three other places in the country that either in terms of a permanent repository or in terms of a regional storage place are in fact selected. I think you're right. You understood me exactly. I do think that there is still a possibility, because I think if we could assure people that we had a technically appropriate process, and Professor Coffin is stronger on being able to sort of articulate for you this morning exactly what that would involve, but we also did it in a way that Nevada said, hey, wait a second, maybe we don't want to be left out entirely of this process now that everybody else is participating and understands it as well, too. Yes, I think we could fundamentally reorganize our thinking about this process. And my sense is actually that the new Secretary of Energy may think that, too.
I think it's important to recognize that nuclear waste and spent fuel provide unique challenges and hazards associated with the radioactivity with them. But because of that, we pay as a nation unprecedented attention to safety and to avoiding risks in managing these. Unprecedented in that our attention to safety and the track record there far exceeds the safety and the impacts that we've had with any other type of chemical or hazardous waste or industrial waste, and also in transportation and the safety levels that we expect as a nation with regarding standard commercial chemicals and industry. So we look at making the risks as low as possible, as safe as possible, not only to current generations, but we're talking multiple generations far out into the future with standards that look towards 1,000, 10,000, and 1,000,000 years.
We have a caller. I want to bring them into the conversation, and very quickly, just before I do that, to introduce again our guests. The last person that you heard, that's David Cawson. He is a professor and chair of civil and environmental engineering at Vanderbilt University. Also joining us is Charles Powers. He is professor of environmental engineering at Vanderbilt. And we're talking about long-term storage of highly radioactive nuclear waste. Essentially, we're talking about the waste that has been generated by commercial nuclear power plants, and the plan to develop a permanent storage site or sites for that, which is going on for a long time now. A site was selected in Nevada, but it's still not ready, and there are some questions about whether, in fact, it will ever open and operate. And the question is, well, what are we going to do with this stuff? And they have some ideas. We'll talk some more about that. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we have a caller to bring in. They are here in Urbana, where we are. Line one. Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a brief question, but I want to preface this with a little bit of content. First of all, one of the things about the Yucca Mountain Project is I think that it's a aspect of a larger whole. For the last 8 years, there's been a certain administrative bent towards any kind of scientific research. For example, you were talking about how this was supposed to be a comparative analysis of sites, and then that was decided to be discarded. Curious why, but the second part of this is that I remember back in 2005, there was a friend of mine that works here at the university, and he was actually had a dual role. He was working for the USGS, and he was also teaching hydrology, and he was consulted to do some of the work with Yucca Mountain and produced some research and some reports for them, and he said that he was pretty much disgusted because he felt like everything that he proposed was essentially just set aside. He's like, this is good science. I don't understand what was wrong with this, but essentially felt that there was a political choice behind choosing Yucca Mountain. And I'm just kind of curious now that I've prefaced this, what do you think the future holds? We have a new administration coming in, and whether you think there'll be a review and a look at some new things coming up. Thank you. I'll hang up and listen.
This is David Cawson. Let me start with this and ask Professor Powers to comment as well. Your initial statement that this is part of the whole, I think, is very telling and important. That is, nuclear energy is part of an overall energy policy or package of the United States as a whole, and its role has to be balanced with and part of the overall overall energy policy of the country that includes conservation, that includes renewables, that includes alternative energy, where nuclear plays one particular role. With every energy option we have, they are also entire systems. We talk about clean coal, there are coal residuals, there are coal emissions. We talk about hydroelectric, we know the history of dams there. Here with nuclear, we also have the issue as part of that package of safely and effectively managing the waste from that nuclear system. And as we look at it in an integrated fashion, we have to look into the future about what do we do in the near term. We're suggesting regional storage and aging sites for that, which allow us to get increased confidence and understand the processes involved with deep geologic repositories. The United States is the only nation in the world that has a deep geologic repository for any type of nuclear waste, and that's the Waste Isolation Pilot Plant in near Carlsbad, New Mexico, and that's for defense waste, transuranic waste, as they're characterized. And one of the important aspects of that, as that came into being, was a multi-step process where it was shown first as a demonstration so that there, if it is not performing according to expectation, then we could change course as a nation that way. A similar sort of philosophy for how we deal with the repository for high-level nuclear waste and use nuclear fuel, I believe, is equally important. And as we look, as Professor Powers and I suggest, the aging situation, having a reference of storage up to 100 years, that's important because it allows a number of things to progress. The first is it allows the fuel to cool, so it makes it easier to handle by natural radioactive decay processes in a safe situation. The second is it allows us to...
And that, incidentally, makes it easier to place no matter where, in what geological context you ultimately put it. To have it reduced thermally is an enormously important step, and it also will have less toxicity to it.
Absolutely. It also allows us time to view a repository, Yucca Mountain, as one example, or alternate repositories, as demonstration cases to prove out the assumptions that we're making in the near term to the extent that they can be. It allows us also to understand what the future may hold in terms of other fuel cycles that may separate out constituents from the used nuclear fuel and regain additional energy from them through part of the refuel cycles, much as France and Japan are now doing.
So just again, to make sure people understand, just to give a thumbnail sketch of what you're talking about, rather than the plan as it stands now to take everything and to put it in one place, and that place, as far as the federal government right now is concerned, is Yucca Mountain.
And it was supposed to have been there in 1998.
It was supposed to have been there, 10 years ago. It was supposed to have already been opening 10 years ago. And to keep it there for a very, very long time, your suggestion is we need to have maybe four sites placed regionally so that different places will share whatever burden is associated. You can put the waste there for a long but shorter period of time. During that time, then its radioactivity will decay so that, say, at the end of a century, you're dealing with something that is still radioactive but not as highly radioactive as it is today, and that then perhaps you would be looking at moving material from some of that material from there to another place for longer, more permanent storage, and you're saying that, well, that might be Yucca Mountain, but it also might be someplace else.
And David has already pointed out, we already have one place in a completely different kind of geological formation.
Right.
The WIP. I want to say several things about that.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We already have it. David Cosson is right. There's only one place in the world where there is such a place to put it. That one, actually, though, went through some complex discussions within the state of New Mexico. Eventually won pretty complete acceptance of the entire technical community and the state, as well as the local community, because the kinds of issues that your caller has just raised, concerns by scientists who, rightly or wrongly, have particular sort of findings that suggested problems, those all got worked out and aired in a really very public, very effective context in which the Congress in that particular case came back behind the evolving consensus, and then ensconce that in a different set of federal laws. We think that's really important. If any important group of scientists think that their work is being left out of this process, that really creates doubts in the society. And we need institutionally, whether it be the Department of Energy or, as we also suggest, perhaps through an independent commission that looks at these technical questions and looks at the siting of these of any of these facilities, in addition to what the Department of Energy might do, and we need to reestablish confidence that the technical choices that are being made are in fact technical choices and are not political. That in fact all the affected parties understand what those are. We think that can be won. We have a lot of experience actually with taking situations which are very controversial and converting them into situations where the technical consensus is arrived at, and people assent when they feel that they're in fact involved in actually running whatever risk may remain. And so your question, the experience of your caller is one that we are very committed to trying to come up with a process that will address.
Well, and I have some other callers here, I promise I will get to these people. Let me ask you another quick question, and hopefully it can be answered quickly. If we set aside all of the popular and political opposition to Yucca Mountain, are there still questions about its technical suitability, whether it can in fact suitably be made into a storage site for this material?
We're at a very important crossroads of Yucca Mountain. A license application has been submitted to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which will be reviewing it as an independent set of technical experts that will be looking in detail at every facet of it. And that's looking at for regulatory compliance. At the same time, we have independent Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board. It's a presidential appointees approved by Congress. That is a group of technical experts that look at it from a scientific basis, not only in terms of regulatory compliance, but from how it operates up to the long-term science behind it and how all that integrates and performs. Those are two very august bodies looking at it from all aspects. And I think we need to allow the time for the debate about the technical ability of it. Personally, I believe that it is a technically viable and safe option. But for the whole scientific community and the process that's put in place to comment on it in the appropriate forum. At the same time, throughout this process, there have been many committees of the National Academies of Sciences and Engineering that have looked at this process, and they have reported a similar thing that we're recommending, that it be a one-step-at-a-time process, that we learn as we go, and we have the ability, if things aren't performing the way we believe they should be, to make mid-course corrections.
Mm-hmm. Right. But given the history we've just talked about, until all that sort of comes together and is done in a way in which the affected parties feel as if they're participating in the process of understanding every step of what David just described, we don't think we get there. We think that's why we're saying, let's step back, give ourselves a little time so that as the technical bodies that David was just talking about can look at it again. And perhaps, you know, we will almost certainly eventually need either the existing Yucca Mountain proposal to be dramatically expanded because we can fill up Yucca with what's supposed to go there right now, according to the current definition of what can go there. So we probably will need another repository, or we need to figure out whether or not we really are ready to have Yucca take on a much larger role. That hasn't been technically evaluated effectively yet. It wasn't even part of the question. So we do think that providing the time to give the country a sort of catch its breath around this question and do something which we think is really quite quickly proved to be quite safe, as to putting these materials in temporary storage for 90 years. That gives us the new start that we're going to need.
All right, let's talk with some other callers. Mohammed is next, line number two. Hello.
Yes, I would like to ask, since Japan and France and England have gone nuclear, England's building them as fast as they can get them up, and Japan has never had a problem with them, and the French have reformulated the waste to the size of a teacup, and that lady is helping England with their nuclear program. Why on earth is the U.S. still sitting here, not going nuclear, and why have those statistics of Japan, France, and England not been repeated loud and clear and often to the American people? I don't understand it.
I think we need to recognize that we have a significant component of our energy right now in the United States that is generated by nuclear. I believe it's between 20 and 30%. We have over 100 operating nuclear power reactors in the United States, and we're at a junction right now trying to decide the role that it will play as part of an overall mix of conservation and renewables in the future of the U.S. energy security. and we're going through a time period where from the 70s till now, we were not building new nuclear facilities, and we're going down a path now where there are applications for licenses to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission for new facilities. And as part of that, we need as a generation of Americans to understand better what the safety factors are, the way radiation behaves, the protection and the risks associated with it, and make it as part of an informed judgment for the overall country. France and England and Japan and Belgium, as well as other countries such as Sweden, all are engaged in similar discussions and processes, and each nation comes up with a different decision as to their path forward. But I don't think we've had this full dialogue in the United States.
And it's certainly, and the way in which we've conducted it has been so sort of contentious, as though we're sort of throwing daggers at each other in the course of sort of providing information, that I do think that if we gave ourselves the time to look at all the information you just talked about coming internationally and relate it to our own situation, that we would in fact be able to come up with something new. Let me go back. There was a decision. You rightly point out that the United States has done nothing with the idea of taking the waste that comes out of a reactor and trying to figure out whether or not it can be recycled to recover the perhaps 95% to 98% of the original energy that is still there into a second use. We decided back in 1977 and 78 that we weren't going to do that. And we did it, President Carter did it, because he said that he thought that if we didn't do it, no one else would do it, and he thought that the proliferation risks associated with the wrong, getting these materials into the wrong hands and for the production of weapons, whether either done by a rogue state or by terrorists, would be less. Well, in fact, you are right. The rest of the world has, in fact, gone on and begun to develop reprocessing. We have not. We're only beginning to look at that question again. And we can be helped in that because, in the meantime, some other countries have developed experience. But rather than sort of saying we know exactly what that experience is, it turns out to be a complex matter. And if, in fact, we can sort of catch our breath and sort of calmly look at that additional information, we think that you can handle both the waste questions and the proliferation questions on a technical basis, and get confidence among people that they know what's happening.
All right, we are a little bit past our midpoint here. I have some other callers we'll get right on to, but I would like to introduce once again the guest for this part of Focus 5-8. And last person you heard, that's Charles Powers. He's professor of environmental engineering at Vanderbilt University. Also joining us is David Cawson. He is professor and chair of civil and environmental engineering, also at Vanderbilt. They're both associated with the Consortium for Risk Evaluation with Stakeholder Participation, owned by its initials as CRESP. That is a multi-university organization that carries out basic and applied research to improve the environmental restoration of the U.S. Department of Energy's complex to produce and maintain nuclear materials. And what we're talking about here this morning is the issue of nuclear waste that is produced by power plants that generate electricity and what we do with the long-term storage of that waste. And as we have explained, there has been this effort going on now for a long time by the federal government to set up a site in Nevada, a place called Yucca Mountain. The main problem there has been the great deal of popular opposition. The people of the state of Nevada, it seems most of them don't want it. And that's one of the reasons that it is a decade past the time that it was supposed to open. And the two of them argue that maybe we could do something more of a middle ground kind of solution, where we would have a number of storage sites in different parts of the country that would hold on to this waste for 90 years. And then it could be perhaps we could reprocess it. Perhaps there are things we could do with it. It would become less radioactive. Eventually, some of that would have to go into a more permanent storage site. Maybe that would be Yucca Mountain. Maybe that would be someplace else. Questions are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. And Decatur is our next caller. This is line one. Hello.
Yes, I've heard an idea floated around, and I'd like to get your thoughts on the matter. That idea would be, as a final placement of the final material, would be to place it in the subduction zone and kiss it goodbye. So your thoughts on that?
And somebody will have to explain what that means.
Okay. This is Professor Kossin. The subduction zone is where continental plates come together, and as one goes under the other, it is drawn deep into the Earth. And that is a very slow, very long-term process. Right now, when you look internationally, there are a number of different types of repositories that are being planned for this these types of materials. For example, in Belgium, they're planning to put it in a deep clay formation, which is millions of years old, referred to as the Boon clay, which is deep below the surface, and to isolate it that way. You look at other countries, they're looking at granite formations, which are deep in the earth. We've been looking at Yucca Mountain, which is a volcanic tuff type of formation. The subduction zones that you refer to, they are not necessarily the long-term stability zones, because they are active geologically. What we're trying to do is locate areas where both through a combination of our engineering system design, it gives us confidence for the very long-term isolation of the material. And on top of that, the stability of the geologic formation also gives it very long isolation times, so that it's consistent with the time frames of geologic time, meaning to and past the next ice age. So there are a lot of factors that go into it in terms of siting and accessibility, both the technical issues and the social issues. And the process exercises a lot of care and safety because of the both engineering and natural geologic areas. The subduction zone, by where it's located and the issues that it would take to site there, have not been a priority for any of the countries that are moving forward right now.
I want to add one other type of geological formation. We've mentioned it before, which is salt, which is where the National Academy of Sciences originally thought would be the best place for it, and that is, in fact, what we have successfully done in New Mexico. That is not where we've decided to put Yucca. We decided to put it in a really quite different formation. We can go into that if that's of interest to the callers.
All right. Well, we have somebody else to get to. Why don't we do that? Someone in Mahomet on our line number 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question is, and I don't think the general public, and I certainly am not a scientist, understands the half-life of some of the waste that comes from the nuclear plants. Could you touch on some of the material, the waste that comes out of there? The reprocessing sounds pretty interesting, and technically it sounds like there may be some possibilities there. I know nothing about that, and it sounds like it's kind of in its development stage. But certainly touch on the half-life of the material that's coming out of there, so everybody gets an idea of how long this stuff is going to be stored.
Right.
Sure. I'll take that one. This is Professor Kossin. When you come out of the nuclear reactor, there are a wide range of constituents, of radioactive constituents. Some of them have very short half-lives, on the order of hours to days to months. Half-life is the time that it takes for half of the material to decay or to naturally go away. Some of the material, the major heat-producing ones that you hear of short-term, are cesium and strontium, strontium-90 and cesium-137. They have half-lives on the order of approximately 30 years. They are the initial products of the reaction that why we suggested about 90 years, because over 3 half-lives, greater than 90% of it is gone by natural decay processes. Some of the materials, such as the actinides, which include uranium, plutonium, the transuranics that you hear about quite a bit, they take very long periods of time, thousands of years to tens of thousands of years or longer to decay. And that's why when we look at it, we look at very long-term isolation periods, that being thousands of years or longer. Now, but it's also important to put this in context about other hazardous constituents that we worry about. Let's take mercury, for example, as a constituent that's emitted into the atmosphere through a number of natural and man-made processes. We all have health concerns, such as consuming fish contaminated with mercury. Mercury never decays. That is a hazardous constituent that is always with us. So at least with the short-term ones, they decay away so we can manage them for a limited period of time and then not have to worry about them. The longer-term ones present unique hazards because of their toxicity and radioactivity, but we also have to keep in mind a lot of other hazardous constituents that we live with every day are there forever, as well as these from our lifetimes and generations into the future are practically forever.
Let me add just one quick thing to that. The question was so good, and I think the questioner, if he's really part of the more general public, had no idea that some of this is very, very quickly goes away. Some of it goes away, half of it goes away in 30 years. And that stuff is some of the toughest stuff to deal with in terms of particularly of heat. And then, as Professor Costin said, some of it is much longer, and we need to worry about sort of where that is. Some of that longer live stuff is precisely where some of the best potential for recycling for energy comes from. And that's actually why our new proposed Secretary of Energy, the one that Senator, your senator, has proposed for the new head of the Energy Department, thinks it's so important to take a look at that question, because it may be that if, in fact, we do reprocess some of those materials, we will only have to worry about storing them for much shorter periods of time. He suggests perhaps only 1,000 years if, in fact, we reprocess it in the right way. So there's lots of very interesting possibilities out there, and we, in fact, know a good deal about what the reprocessing, both chemistry procedures and procedures would be, but we really haven't had a chance to look at those questions very, very seriously. And certainly, you are right; the public doesn't understand very much about what David and I have just been talking about for the last several minutes.
There is a new emphasis on understanding that in a new context because of the nonproliferation issues and the potential of keeping material out of the wrong hands and making it more intrinsically safe so it could not be used for negative purposes. We're all interested in protecting our future generations and also economically. These things aren't without cost, so that therefore it is both the technical, the cost, and the social issues and the coupling of the benefits and avoiding some of those international potential risks that all have to be factored into it, and we need a very deliberate and thoughtful time frame to move forward with it. I really believe that as we think about energy policy, the role of nuclear, the role of other renewables and conservation, we have to think about what the near term is. We also have to be thinking forward to the next couple of generations. We need to be looking at time horizons of approximately 50 to 100 years.
Let me just get in a question here, and then I'll get back to the phones because we have a number of other callers. The material that we're talking about has been stored, generally speaking, has been stored on site at the power plants while we have been waiting for a long-term storage. They've been keeping it there where it's been produced. Would it be really such a bad thing? I'm sure they wouldn't like it, but would it really be such a bad thing if we just said to them, well, why don't you guys hold on to this for a while longer? Could we continue to deal with it that way?
Right now, the storage at the sites is in two forms. One, initially after it comes out of the reactor, is in large pools of water to deal with that initial release of radioactivity and to shield it and the cooling needs for it. And then many sites right now are taking it out of those pools and putting it into what's referred to as dry cask storage. That's sealed in containers and metal containers inside of concrete containers, very carefully prepared, and it's safe. Then the question is, are we better off, instead of keeping it distributed across the country at all the different reactor sites, putting it in consolidated areas where it is more efficient to store and to secure it, than at the individual reactor sites? And this also goes to part of the commitment and credibility of the government to the communities that, as part of our energy policy and nuclear energy, has been that the federal government would take control and manage those materials. so a number of the communities feel that it is time to get past key storing it indefinitely at those sites and to see demonstrable progress in federal management of those materials.
In fact, to keep them where they are and under the utilities at the moment is leading to a whole series of litigation moves made by the utilities who were promised that by 1998 the government would have taken responsibility, and it hasn't. But part of our argument that we get it into four places rather than 100 is to provide a clear sense that the country has evolved a understanding, a process that overcomes what everyone feels at the moment anyhow is sheer paralysis, and all focused on Yucca Mountain because we can't move forward on it. We think that's a way of breaking open that question. And open also will allow those communities who are thinking about whether or not they want to be host to new power plants to be confident that within the right period of time, after the very initial cooling with the very short-term materials that are very hot when the material comes out of the generator, that very quickly those will have a place to which they can go for that 90-year period. It just sort of gives a sense to people that there's a coherent program underway that's beginning to work, and that's part of our argument. In addition to the technical and legal issues.
We have some other callers here. We have about 10 minutes left. Our guests this morning, David Cawson and Charles Powers, they are both professors of engineering at Vanderbilt University. And we're talking about long-term storage of highly radioactive nuclear waste. Questions are welcome. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Our next caller is in Effingham, line 4. Hello.
Yes, I think my comment and questions are pertinent to this discussion. The once electricity is produced, we have some old technology that burns the light bulb and operate our TV, and you know the radio tubes are long gone. But in that technology advance, is there science out there and that is moving on to use electricity more efficiently in to the masses and their daily use of that, and to lower the generation of the electricity either by nuclear or by coal, and to minimize the burning. My other question is, has anyone brought up FutureGen, David?
No.
Okay, then the same principle applies from FutureGen as these gentlemen are talking about, and the stuff is transported immediately out of the furnace and into the ground, as is the hauling. If I remember right, that nuclear waste is going to have to be hauled from these nuclear plant sites to Yucca Mountain or wherever it's going to be stored. And the FutureGen seems to me that if a man makes a hole in the ground, something can happen to that hole, and that stuff can erupt out of there, which is all full of mercury too. And if you could address those questions, and if there is any science that is in motion or in the mind, and how we are going to address these problems, and still have our cake and eat it too, you know, that's basically what it's all about. So thank you very much, and I'll ring off.
All right. Well, those are good questions, and I should remind you we have about 5 minutes left.
Sure. We are very excited about the fact that the country looks like it's going to take all questions: how we generate, how we reduce the demand, and much more efficiently use the electricity that we create. We think that's an incredibly important piece, and certainly that has been the focus of the new Secretary of Energy and the work he's been doing at the National Lab in California. We think he's dead on with that question. And see, we're thinking a lot. David's thinking about his kids, Michael and Ryan. I'm thinking about my grandson, Sasha. What in the world are we going to do to get the country in a place where both how it uses energy and how it creates it is in a far, far better place and protects us so much better in terms of issues associated with climate change? We think every bit of this is part of the work of the country, and every citizen needs to be part of it. I'll let David pick up the issue of the FutureGen.
We're in a unique situation where you have a confluence of national vocalization of the need for energy security, environmental protection, avoidance of climate change or mitigation, reducing greenhouse gas, and efficiency. All of that plays an important role, but it's also important to recognize that you don't necessarily where it's best to locate a generator or a power reactor is not necessarily the best place to locate a disposal site because of the geology that is there and some of the other constraints. It's also important to recognize that we have been transporting used nuclear fuel from both government and private sectors and other nuclear materials across the country very safely for quite some time. The safety record of transportation of these types of materials is very, very good. And as I mentioned earlier, because of the unique hazards, we take unique precautions to protect populations as the material is moving, future generations. As Chuck mentioned, I've got my children, Michael and Ryan and Gabe and Garrett. They're all eager to see a future as you are, where we have energy security and where we have also economic competitiveness, which means reasonably priced energy resources that are used efficiently.
All right. I want to try to get at least one more caller here. This is someone who is in Champaign in line two. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question is this. If, like the other caller, France, Japan, England, do they debate this for hours, hours upon hours? Why don't we just follow their plan and get it over with? It seems to be working elsewhere. Why do we have to just keep going over and over? If these two gentlemen have anything to do with the nuclear system, power plants going online, it'll be another 100 years. Let's just follow their plan. Call someone from France to the United States and let's get it over with. Thank you.
As we have said, we need to take a path where nuclear energy is part of the overall energy policy and package. And the issue of reprocessing or not, they view it from an energy security. It comes with costs. It comes with technical risks that we think are important that we handle appropriately. It is not inexpensive. And we are a country that is accustomed to relatively inexpensive energy. We don't have to do the recycling right now under current technology to have nuclear power. But we do need to be moving forward, as I think this gentleman appropriately states.
Mm. Well, the French have part of the answer, but they don't. They haven't solved in any way, shape, or form the issue of what the ultimate disposal looks like. They're struggling with that as much as we are. And so I think we're prepared to learn from wherever we can learn and move as quickly as we can learn from it. We think that's a superb idea, but nobody's got this. Nobody's got the energy issues that we were talking about. Everything from how we be much more efficient about what we use, and then how we mix the different ways in which we can generate energy. Nobody's really got that solved yet, and the country is just now getting ready to do it. I think we may be actually finally prepared to think about those in terms that both involve the public in the selection and choice-making process, learning to run the risk of how to do so and doing so intelligently by making sure that they have good information and confidence that the scientists who are talking to them about it are calling it as best they can.
We just completed a three-day workshop at Vanderbilt with a lot of the nation's top nuclear scientists, and it became very clear, as well as international ones, that the world is watching us. As I said, we're the only country with a deep geologic repository. Other countries are moving forward, but they're watching what we're doing with Yucca Mountain and with other nuclear waste management issues.
It's something that I'm just curious about, and we'll have to be quick with this. I'm thinking about the fact that earlier in the conversation, I think Professor Powers noted that if we took all of the material, the high-level waste that was now being stored on site, and if we sent that all to Yucca Mountain would be full.
Right now.
So that means that, even if today we shut all the plants down, we didn't generate any more waste, we would have a problem and we would fill up the site that we're talking about. So, supposing that we continued, and as some people argue, continue to use nuclear generation to supply some of our electricity, and how much, say, if we did continue to do that for another 10 years, just another decade, how much more material would we have that we would have to figure out what are we going to do with it? I mean, at what rate would we be adding more material to our stockpile of high-level waste?
That's a strange way of phrasing the question. My guess is we would be adding about 20% every 10 years, maybe 30%. The issue, you said, you know, it's not clear. I mean, the reason that Yucca would be full has to do with the fact that Congress has defined how much to put there with a very strange metric for deciding that. It's not necessarily the case that that would be the technical limit to Yucca. But, in fact, we haven't looked at that question effectively yet because that was never a question that the Department of Energy was asked to address and what it was supposed to do with this initial application to the Nuclear Energy and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission.
We need the equivalent of the current plan for Yucca Mountain for about every 40 to 50 years of operation if we don't do reprocessing.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that with the promise, however, I'm sure that many of these issues, we've talked about these in the past, and I'm sure we will continue to talk about them in the future. For right now, we have to leave it with our thanks to our guest, Charles Powers, a professor of environmental engineering at Vanderbilt. Professor Powers, thank you very much.
That's been good to be with you.
And Professor David Cawson, he is a professor chair of civil and environmental engineering there also at Vanderbilt. And Professor Cawson, thank you.
And thank you for inviting us to join you today.